Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. My name is Kieran Tavam, and as always, I'm joined by my colleague on the other side of the pond, JJ Duke. JJ, how are you, mate?
Kieran, I'm good. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. I'm all right. Obviously, some difficult times over here in the UK at the moment with what's happened over the last few weeks, but you know, we're a united nation and we carry on as best we can, and that's why we try and do things to keep ourselves occupied. And that's why actually we're doing another podcast only a week after we released the last one, but that's because we have some quite big things to talk about. And we're going to focus on two things on this show, aren't we? We're going to kind of split it in half. We're going to do a review of the UEFA Women's Champions League final, which of course took place last week between Lyon and PSG. And we're going to do another half of the show on having a little bit of a look back at the FAWSL Spring Series, because that came to a close this past weekend and it was Chelsea Ladies who came out on top. So we'll have a very quick break, and when we come back, we will discuss first the UEFA Women's Champions League.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So, JJ, I was in Cardiff last Thursday, as were over 22,300 spectators. Fantastic crowd in Cardiff, I have to say, and a brilliant host city. Did really, really well. Had a nice atmosphere to it. Lots of different people there, families, and obviously people had travelled in from France, from Lyon and Paris. Some really vocal support for both teams. It was Lyon that came out on top on penalty kicks, the second time that these two had gone to penalty kicks after Lyon overcame PSG in the French Cup final. It was Lyon again who came out on top on penalty kicks. I know you had a chance to see it. I guess the first question I'd have is, what was your assessment of the tie?
Well, I think this match really spoke to the fact that these teams knew every strength and every weakness of each other. I mean, you don't often see goalless draws in finals. Often you do see tight matches, but you know, between these two teams, you know that there's firepower. So when you pit these two teams together, who have played, what, this was their fourth meeting of the 2016-17 season. They just played a high priority match just very recently in the French Cup final. You kind of had the feeling that this one was going to need more than 90 minutes. In this case, it went all the way to spot kick. So I'm not surprised. I know you and I were fairly vocal on social media saying that this was not the most memorable final in the world, but it wasn't without a few chances, wasn't it?
I've just been and recorded some stuff with Jen Cooper for the Mix Zone podcast, and I don't mind plugging the Mix Zone on this show because I really like listening to it, and I know they've been big supporters of Women's Soccer Zone as well. But I described the game as intriguing rather than entertaining to Jen, and I think that was pretty much my assessment of the 90 minutes and then the 30 minutes of extra time. Not a huge number of chances. I think the main talking points were actually probably before and after the game. Of course, I have to get your views, JJ, on Alex Morgan. We discussed it on the podcast before the Women's Champions League final that Alex had travelled with the team. It looked like that she would be available. We both said it would be an achievement for her to play some part, maybe off the bench. When you saw her name in the starting lineup, what was your initial reaction? Because I know what mine was, and I'll tell you what it was in a minute.
I thought that at that point, seeing Alex Morgan's name in the lineup meant that the injury wasn't anywhere near significant that they're talking about. Maybe it was kind of one of those, they always say coaches hold their cards very, very close to them. Gerard Prichot, I thought, maybe was building it up a little bit, maybe winding us all up by saying, oh yeah, Alex, probably no chance of getting it. Maybe trying to get Patrice Lair on his side thinking, well, okay, there's one head of the multi-headed attacking monster that we don't have to worry about. So credit to them, a little bit of a slow play, but it really showed that she wasn't ready for this match. I thought, you know, going back to that last podcast saying, hey, you know, you bring her in kind of that role that she had, the quote-unquote baby horse era, where comes in for 15, 20 minutes, just runs her socks off and makes life miserable for the defense. I think probably could have been better suited to that. But having her start and then come off so quickly, that really changed the game for Lyon.
Yeah, and do you know what? I didn't actually think about that at the time, but when I look at how the game petered out in that last 15, 20 minutes where nothing really happened, there weren't that many chances. I remember Marie-Laure Delis coming very close, having a shot just wide of the post. But other than that, don't really remember a lot happening in the last 15-20 minutes. If Alex Morgan had been thrown on against a tired PSG defence who, you know, a slight lapse in concentration, she is the sort of player that can pounce on any mistake, and she's lethal in one-on-one positions. And I just wonder how much more effective she might have been had she been brought on for the last, say, 10-15 minutes. And, you know, with the game going into extra time, she would have been available for that. But 22 minutes she lasted. Well, 22 minutes was the time that she went off, but she was treated for a few minutes before that. I think it was about 18 minutes that she actually physically played in that final. And I can tell you, when I saw her name on that starting lineup, I had to take a double take. You know, I genuinely wasn't sure if I'd read it right, because I could not believe, having been out for 3.5 weeks or whatever it was, with a hamstring injury. Let's not forget, the president of Lyon, Jean-Michel Aulas, had completely ruled her out of the French Cup final, had pretty much said it was unlikely that she would play in the UEFA Women's Champions League final. So to go from being unlikely to play to starting, having only trained from the Monday, so we're talking about 3 days of training before the actual competition final, I just couldn't believe that Gerard Precheur had put her in that position. Now, it was his last game. You know, it was his last game for the club. So he's obviously looking at, look, I need to get my best team out there because I want to go out on a high. I guess the other question I'd have, how much pressure maybe is Alex Morgan put on this? You know, it was her last game as well. We don't know if she's going to be coming back to Europe. I must confess, I've written a piece for Women's Soccer Zone if people want to have a look at that. I don't see her coming back anytime soon. How desperate was she to play in this final, and how much convincing did she maybe do and play a part in Gerard Precheur picking her for the game?
I mean, that's a question that has a lot of insinuating factors. I mean, look, we can't really get inside the head of Alex Morgan without Alex Morgan actually talking about, you know, what the lead up of that was. But yeah, you make a couple interesting points. I mean, any player wants to play in big matches. Alex Morgan has played in a plethora amount of big matches in her career. But this is one that she has never been, you know, involved with. And let's face it, joining Lyon, this was probably the date that was circled on her calendar. She knew that there was not a very good chance, but a pretty solid chance that Lyon would at least be getting to the last four, if not making the Champions League final. And you want to do everything that you can in your power to be available. So sure, one would have to guess that she try to push it and try to, you know, make a positive impact to say, hey, I'm ready, I'm good to go. Every player is going to say that they're ready and good to go, and it's going to come down to maybe what the medical staff said, if they believe that she was good to go. Because let's face it, if the medical staff said that Alex Morgan was not good to go, she would not have played. So clearly she had to pass some fitness test to be able to play, or even think about playing in this match to begin with, let alone start. So there's some probably truth to it that we know. There's some truths that we may never know in all of this stuff. But yeah, it's disappointing. And obviously now, because with the injury, she's ruled out of the US friendlies that are coming up.
Yeah, of course, the US due to play Sweden and Norway later on this week. And of course, look, if Alex Morgan says, I'm fit, I'm ready to go, and the doctors and the medical team say, no, you're not, and tell the manager that, then I'd be very surprised if he overruled them. So I'm in no way saying that what Alex Morgan says goes, because that just wouldn't work. That wouldn't be the case, and especially in a team littered with so much talent, they didn't need to start her. They didn't need to have her involved, but they clearly felt she was ready and that she was able. And look, it didn't happen, and sadly for her, but you know, for her, she's got a medal around her neck at the end of the day. But I don't want to make it all about Alex Morgan, because there was a number of other quality players. And I think we've already said the game, not the most entertaining, but I kind of felt like it was a bit of a chess match, JJ. It was who's going to make that vital move that could almost find that goal that never actually came. But it just shows that even though Lyon have finished so far ahead in Division 1, PSG, we should mention, won't be in the Champions League next year because they've ended up finishing third in their division behind Lyon and Montpellier. But PSG seem to be, when they're on their game, they really seem to be able to push Lyon and present a lot of questions to them.
Well, I think there's two elements to this, Kieran. for their, at least in my opinion, I thought that they created the better of the chances, and at times they were dictating in how that match was going. They controlled the center of the field very well. It was, for me, tough to count, but I don't think Jennifer Marjan or Camille Abelie had very many impactful touches through the middle to try and, you know, facilitate and create opportunities. So they won that battle. I thought Eve Parisette was brilliant on the wing. Sure, she had some losing moments against Emma Majerie, but I thought at times she did very well to lock down the flank that she was on. And that opened up the game a little bit. That created those chances. But let's face it, you and I both know, in finals, you may only get one or two chances. They had 3 to 4 grade A opportunities that they did not finish. And when you leave those on the table, they will be punished. Now, they weren't punished through 120 minutes, but let's face it, one or two of those goals go in, their shots go in, this game could have been very different. I think if PSG got one of those to convert, you know, they might have forced Lyon then to stretch, which I thought at that time, with Morgan out, with Ada Hegerberg not having a memorable game. We can honestly go ahead and say that. Eugenie Le Sommer had a couple of moments but wasn't really there. I think this one was really for the taking for PSG, and they had the formula right. They just didn't capitalize.
Yeah, should stress Ada Hegerberg had suffered from a stomach bug the day before. Norwegian media had reported that on the day, so you can understand why. Number one, she maybe didn't have her most influential game. Number two, why she was hauled off after an hour. But you're right. Lyon, usually so potent in front of goal, usually creating chances left, right and centre. Jennifer Marajan was given player of the match, which I found a little bit of a surprise, because, as you say, I don't think she had anywhere near the influence that she would normally have on a game like this. Same with Camille Abelie. I actually thought it was in the wide areas where the majority of the play came from. You've already mentioned Eve Parisette. I thought Amel Majerie did very well. For Ashley Lawrence had a good game. You know, big occasion for her as a young player. You know, the first, along with Kadisha Buchanan, the first two Canadians to play in a UEFA Women's Champions League final. I thought they held themselves very well. I don't recall a huge number of chances coming for either team from central areas. I know Shirley Cruz had a chance in the first half that was well saved by Sarah Bouardi, and obviously Ada had a chance that she would normally, I would say, 99 times out of 100 convert. But other than that, there wasn't that many opportunities. And then obviously we went to extra time, not a lot happened in that. And then penalty kicks for the second time in 2.5 weeks. Lyon and PSG went to penalty kicks. And I'll be honest with you, as soon as it went to PKs, I kind of thought it would be Lyon's, because I just think that they've got that stranglehold on PSG mentally. And it proved to be the case. But, oh, what a horrible situation for Polish goalkeeper Katarzyna Kiedyzinek to take that PK and then to have to face the decisive kick from the opposition goalkeeper. I described it as Pistols of Dawn, much like you see in a Western film where you've got the two goalkeepers going head-to-head against each other, and it was Bouardi who came out on top. But I can't even begin to imagine what was going through Kiedyzinek's head when she faced that spot kick.
And I mean, it's disappointing for her to begin with, because she pulled out a brilliant save against Le Sommer. I mean, flailing all out, sure had a little bit of help from the keeper's best friend to keep it out. But you know what? I thought at that point that might have been the turning point. But yeah, the PK that was missed straight hour by Guerrero. You know, everybody was spot on since then. But Kiedyzinek, she just looked all wrong going up to take that penalty. Feet just weren't sorted. You kind of knew at the moment that she took off, it just wasn't going to be. And Bouadi, I mean, hey, credit to her. She kept her nerve, because it's hard, speaking as a goalie, to watch something like that unfold, and then all of a sudden you have to role reversal. I mean, really, it could be in any sport where you see something and then you have to go and one-up it. But you know what the position is like and the feeling is like on the opposite side. So I have to give her a whole lot of credit, because she stepped up and coolly hit her spot kick and won it.
I thought you were going to say, as a goalkeeper, it's difficult to watch Sarah Bouardi, because she's the most unpredictable goalkeeper in world football, because she does some brilliant stuff, yeah, and then she does some stuff that's really awful. But
we had only one moment there's a little bit of what the sliced kick in about like the 23rd, 24th minute. I think outside of that, she was very, very solid. But you do bring up a fair point. I'll give
you
that
one. I really like Sarah Bouardi. I know there are people who have question marks over her, but I really rate her. Brilliant shot stopper. Yes, she does some crazy stuff, but she is like a modern day sweeper keeper. She is literally on the edge of her area more often than not, sweeping up behind her back three or back four, depending on what Lyon play. But you're right. I mean, look, it's a horrible situation for Kiera Žinek to find herself in, to miss the spot kick and then have to face Bouardi. And I will say this, absolute class act. When she realised, obviously, that Bouardi had scored a penalty and Lyon were away celebrating, you know, their fourth Champions League title, Kiera Žinek, you would have given her absolutely every sympathy and backed her to go and hide, run down the tunnel, get away from the spotlight, get away from the cameras, from the supporters. She didn't do that. She went straight over to the PSG ultras, the main fan base, the main fan corner, who were making a lot of noise throughout the game. And she essentially went over to apologise for the mistake that she'd made. And look, we say mistake, penalty kicks being missed are not classed really as mistakes. They happen. But I thought it showed a lot of class and a lot of professionalism, not only not to hide and to run down the tunnel, but to actually go over to the supporters and acknowledge them and apologise for what happened. I think that said a lot about the type of character that she is.
I agree 100%. And I think, you know, for something like this, it speaks volumes about not only the player, about who they are and what values they hold, but how much a moment like this means for a club. I mean, this is what you play for. You play for a chance to win trophies, whether it's domestically or, in this case, I mean, it's the Euro. Sure, it's a continental title, but you and I can fairly go ahead and say this. That's the number one club match in women's football, is to win the European Champions League, you know? So that speaks a lot about her. You said every right. She could have just ran down the tunnel and, you know, after shaking everybody's hands. But no, she goes over and has, you know, conversations with the supporters, who I thought, by the way, they were brilliant. The PSG supporters, my goodness. I mean, they created such an atmosphere that any player would want to be playing in that match. And I thought it spoke volumes about all parties concerned. It was a great moment. I appreciate whoever posted that video on social media, because honestly, we wouldn't know about it unless you're in that stadium that night.
Yeah, can't second that enough. You know, they were superb. And the Lyon fans as well. I mean, Lyon, I've been to a few Champions League finals now, the majority of them featuring Lyon. And their support is really, really solid as well. They travel really well. And they made noise as much as they normally do. But as you say, PSG, the ultras, I was in Berlin in 2015 when PSG narrowly lost out to Frankfurt, and they were very loud in that final as well. So credit to them, and credit to both sets of supporters and to the community of Cardiff. As I said, over 22,000, biggest crowd at a UEFA Women's Champions League final since, I think, 2011, 2012, when Frankfurt and Lyon played in front of 50,000 fans in Munich. This was the biggest crowd since that one 5 years ago. So they did a really good job in Cardiff. Lots of publicity, lots of marketing, lots of advertising around the city. I saw at least a few billboards and posters. And when you entered Cardiff train station, the barriers had UEFA Women's Champions League branding on it. So they did a really good job. They did a really, really good job. And I, you know, not the most entertaining game, but as I said, intriguing, interesting. As I said, Lyon, fourth UEFA Women's Champions League title, second in a row after they won over Wolfsburg in Reggio last year. They are the team to beat. We're interested now to see how they strengthen that team. Obviously, they have Alex Morgan departing now for Orlando. We don't know whether she's going to come back. She was very, very honest, actually, I think, JJ, in the mix zone. I asked her the question, you know, I know you're probably fed up of answering it, but will we see you back in Europe? And, you know, she said, I genuinely don't know. I'm torn, you know, in both directions. There's benefits to staying in Lyon and there's benefits to going back to Orlando and the NWSL. So we'll have to see on that one. But we did manage to hear from one of the Canadians, and it was obviously only ever going to be the Canadian on the winning side. As you can understand, PSG weren't sending out a lot of players into the mix zone, and we completely understood that as media, members of the media. But Khadija Buchanan did come out, and she had a chat with the media, and here's some of the things that she had to say about the victory.
Well, how happy are you to get a Champions League medal?
I'm extremely happy. It's great to win three titles in one season. And before I came here, and Jean, the president, I said, we're going to win three titles. So we're going to make history. And today, the whole team effort, and Sarah coming up big in the end with the save and the goal, like, that's huge. So congrats to her. She did an amazing game. And to win this title, I think it puts European soccer on the map for Canadians to look at as well.
Is that something you're very proud of personally?
Yeah, I'm very proud of being the first Canadian to achieve at this highest level. I wouldn't expect to be the first. I just took the leap of faith. I wanted to be with the best players in the world and to better my soccer, and to come out with a medal, it's great.
How tense was the penalty shootout? It was going to the eighth round.
Yeah, again, the first time I was used to. The second time was still nerve-wracking as always. PKs is always nail-biting, and you never know on any given day a PK. The best misses a PK. Messi misses a PK. Neymar misses a PK. So it doesn't matter who takes a PK. It's just on the day, do you feel it or do you not? So, yeah.
So, J-Day, that was Khadija Buchanan. Congratulations to her. A hell of an achievement for such a young player coming over from Canada, coming over from the college system, and in her first season in Europe, winning a treble. We should stress that, not just the UEFA Women's Champions League title, but the French Division 1 and the Coupe de France as well. So she will be buzzing for such a young player. But I think we'll leave the Champions League there. And I should, actually, before we do that, very quick shout out to Sabrine Delanoy, who played her last game for PSG, having had a tremendous career for both club and country, one of the leaders of that PSG side and for the French national team when she played. Last game for her in a PSG shirt. Will be hanging up her cleats after this game, and I think she played really well and converted her penalty in the PK shootout as well. So wish her well, because I think she's been a great professional for both club and country. But we will move on, and we'll move on to the FAWSL Spring Series, which was won by Chelsea Ladies over the 8-game season. It was only 8 games because obviously Notts County Ladies folded 2 days before the season was due to start. Chelsea Ladies came out on top. They had a very good record. They had a very good goal differential, as you guys would say. We would class it as goal difference. And that in the end was what the key thing was, because they finished on the same points as Manchester City, but they come out on top because of the goal difference.
They come out on top despite losing the head-to-head matchup. But, hey, you know, goal difference, as you Brits and everybody else in the world, quite frankly, calls it, that's what matters the most. It's not so much head-to-head. If you score the most and concede the least, that's going to help you in a long stretch. And I think, really, that's, you know, kind of how this season went for Chelsea. They had many different players contribute in a variety of factors. Obviously, you got some players back from injury throughout the season that came on to help. You obviously had new players to begin the season who straight away made an impact. And I think Emma Hayes got the right mix, and now this can only give them a lot of confidence going into the new, I believe what you're calling it, the winter season now, yes?
Well, it's just the FAWSL we're going to be referring to it as. But yes, the actual calendar, I guess you would describe it as autumn winter. But obviously it starts in September and it finishes in about April. So it's going into spring. So it's autumn, winter and spring. But yeah, it will just be a normal FAWSL season starting in September. The players will be due back in mid-August for pre-season. And this spring series was essentially a filler for that transitional period to take place.
Yeah, for sure. And again, you know, it's all about making adjustments, trying some different things out, and whatever the recipe, especially for Chelsea, that they put out onto the field each and every match, well, at least for the most part, it worked out brilliantly.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the questions that we had at the start of this spring series was, what are we actually going to gain from it? Mark Sampson had already announced his England squad for the Euros, so that was kind of taken out of the equation in terms of players competing for places. We all accepted that this was essentially a friendly tournament that was going to be teams playing each other once, so there wasn't that kind of competitive element that you'd have if you were playing over the course of a whole season where you play each other home and away. But I tell you what, I will say this, I watched a lot of the Spring Series this year, whether it was going to games or on broadcast, and I know that you want to talk about broadcast shortly. It was really competitive. You know, you had players going hell for leather, you had players not removing themselves from challenges, not, you know, going in wholeheartedly, not giving 100%. They did the complete opposite. They were fully committed, and actually it was a lot more competitive than I had anticipated it being. So I will give the players and the teams and the coaches that are involved the biggest pat on the back for what they did in this Spring Series, because they made it at least interesting. It was entertaining. We saw big games with big players. And I know that one of the things that you want to talk about as well, mate, is we didn't just see big players and big teams, and we'll talk about them in a minute. We saw a lot of young players as well.
Yeah, we did. You know, I think, as I said before, it was an opportunity for teams to kind of mix and match and try some different things. And, you know, you call it a friendly tournament. I'm going to use that reference point in a moment. But in a competitive season, you wouldn't see as many teams have such heavy rotations in their match-to-match 11s. You'd see maybe a couple of changes here and there, but managers were going for wholesale changes almost every time. Now, sure, obviously you have the FA Cup in there for Manchester City, had the Champions League, so there was time where rotation needed to be going, but teams were dipping down into their reserves and even going into their youth teams, and there are a couple of candidates that truly really struck a chord for at least you and me, and I think we'll start with Arsenal. Two young players that really stood out, at least the one for me, Anna Patton at center half. I didn't really know much about her coming until I think it was the Chelsea match. Then she comes in and absolutely has a brilliant performance, just carries on, continues to build and build. And, you know, I think there's a real possibility that she could be one of the best center halves in that league.
Yeah, played a bit of centre-half, played a bit of right-back as well. I think she really did step up. I said it very openly before the Spring Series started. Arsenal had focused so much on adding quality up top, the likes of Kim Little and Beth Mead and Heather O'Reilly. I did kind of feel after losing Josephine Henning and Casey Stoney that they were short of the back. Gemma Rose has been out of the Spring Series injured for the whole campaign. But Anna Patton and Lottie Wubben-Moy as well came in and did a phenomenal job. You know, the way you got to look at it is that there were a couple of games where they were a little bit off colour, you know, conceding four at home to Liverpool in the 4-4 draw, but kept a clean sheet away at Man City. That was a big result in winning 1-0. They went the Spring Series undefeated. You know, they didn't lose a game in the Spring Series, and it's very rare that you will see a team go undefeated and not win the competition, but it's something for them to build on. And like you say, the youngsters that they had, not just Lottie and Anna, but Leah Williamson in midfield, Dan Carter, Chloe Kelly got some minutes this season as well. Beth Mead is still very young, representing the England under-23s. There are a lot of young players in that squad, and they've obviously added one in Vivian Miedema, who's only in her early 20s as well. There's lots of competition in that team, but we saw some of those youngsters rotated in. We saw it in other teams as well. Have to mention Chelsea because they won the title, and it would be wrong not to. Erin Cuthbert, when they signed her from Glasgow City, 19 years old, you kind of thought, where does she fit in amongst your Crystal Dunns and your Ramona Backmans and your Enya Lukos and your Karen Carneys? She got minutes and she scored goals as well.
And that's all you really need at the end of the day. You have to produce when your name is called, and you know, whether it's 10 minutes or playing a whole match, you have to, you know, make a case for yourself, because not only to gain more minutes for the next match, but to gain minutes for the upcoming season. Yeah, Erin Cuthbert, I think, what, finished in the top percent of goal scoring leaders had 4 goals, which is only 2 off Fran Kirby for the competition lead. And I think she did very well when the times are given to her. And as you said, I mean, you just listed, what, 3, 4 very, very, very talented strikers. And then all of a sudden you have Aaron's name into the picture now. And, you know, that Chelsea team just got a whole lot dangerous, which is going to put a lot of fear into other sides.
Yeah, and Deanna Cooper as well, who came in from London Bees, coming in as an FAWSL2 player, you kind of thought, where does she fit in? And she slotted in really nicely in the Chelsea defence, and she got some good minutes under her belt in this spring series and really didn't look out of place. So I have to give her credit as well, as you mentioned, Erin Cuthbert, goals, and Fran Kirby coming back. Fran Kirby playing less than half the season and finishing top scorer is sums her up completely, doesn't it? It's ridiculous how good she is, and I'll hold my hands up. I thought it was a risk for Mark Sampson to name her in his Euro 2017 squad. She is completely paying back that faith in the few games that she's played for Chelsea, and she'll be raring to go in that Euro 2017 campaign when it kicks off in, what, 6-7 weeks from now. But, yeah, look, I mean, Chelsea and Arsenal have had their young players. Man City had, for me, not just one of the best youngsters in the league, but one of the best players in the league. She started every single game for Man City in the FAWSL Spring Series, and that's Kira Walsh. Anchoring that midfield, surrounded by attacking talent like Carly Lloyd and Jill Scott and Nikita Paris, Tony Duggan. You know, you had Demi Stokes and Lucy Bronze roaring down the wings. Kira Walsh's discipline and Kira Walsh's ability to break up play and start moves from in front of the back four was absolutely phenomenal. And I tell you what, if Mark Sampson was picking his Euro 2017 squad today, Kira Walsh would be in it for me, mate. I think she had a phenomenal spring series, and it continues on from what she was achieving at the back end of last year as well.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, you talked about how that front five or so for Manchester City could be one of the best in the world. I mean, you have to have someone that's going to hold the glue together in front of the back four and the keeper. And Kira, you know, as you said, coming into this year, had a good end of the last campaign and really never lost her step coming forward and helped the team, obviously, to, well, tie a top the table for points, obviously not taking home the crown, but stating her case for day one start come next season. And yeah, I mean, you and I said it was a little bit of a surprise seeing Mark Sampson name his roster so early prior to the Euros. And you're right, I think she could have a real shout for an England call if the team was still yet to be decided. And I think that could go really for a couple other players as well. But yeah, just continue to add to the list of really strong young players who had a standout spring.
Yeah, there's so many. It's really difficult. I mean, I know it's very easy to fall into that trap of talking about those three clubs because they finished in the top three in the league. But, you know, if you look at some of the other teams, we talked about Liverpool. I mean, it's ridiculous to think about it because it feels like she's been around for ages. But Caroline Weir for Liverpool, again, phenomenal in midfield. She's a wonderful, wonderful player to watch because she has everything. She can pass, she can pick out a long pass as well, she can shoot from distance. The game that I saw at Arsenal, she scored with a header in the box arriving late. She is going to be a big player for Liverpool in the coming years. And I tell you what, with Kim Little's injury for Scotland ahead of the Euros, she's going to be a big player for them as well. And actually, it was you that wanted to pick her out, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, she finished second only behind Fran Kirby in the scoring charts. And she played all 8 matches, hardly left the field. And, you know, she scored a cracker of a goal against City in the last match. A little bit of a bending ball to the back post. Keeper saw it late, got a little bit of help from the bar as well, or excuse me, the post as well. But listen, I thought, you know, for Liverpool, they, especially in that last match against Manchester City, they didn't look great at times, leaky at times. They had some stuff going forward, but I think she was a real standout in that match. And yeah, as you said, I mean, she could be one of those players that can help Scotland through the unfortunate situation of Kim Little. Now, again, we haven't seen that she's been officially ruled out of the competition, but when you have an injury like she suffered, it's not likely she's going to be there. So, yeah, she's now got a lot of weight on her shoulders to press on and try and get Scotland through the group stage.
Yeah, Ashley Hodgson, another one who played in defence, another good young player who'd made appearances. And I tell you what, mate, I saw a lot of Neve Charles this year who played out wide for Liverpool. And she's definitely a young player to look out for because she impressed me whenever I saw her. But yeah, I mean, look, there were players across the league. You know, Charlie Wellings of Birmingham City, ladies scoring in the FA Cup final alongside Ellie Brazil, who I saw a few times. I thought she was very good. You venture into Sunderland ladies, Beverly Leon, who played up front for them, and I think she showed some signs of being a really promising player. Reading women signed Kirsty Lynette from, well, what was Notts County ladies. She's still very young and has a promising future ahead of her. They have a number of young players at Reading, Lauren Bruton being another one, Becky Jane. This was definitely a league to give young players an opportunity. Some of them very experienced, granted, but I agree with your sentiment. I think this was a real opportunity. We saw young players as well for, I think probably one of the reasons why Bristol City and Yeovil Town ladies struggled a little bit. They probably have a lot of young players that aren't necessarily ready for this level, and I don't mean that in an offensive way at all. This spring series will have given them a great education, and I'm hoping that they will be ready for the season to start in September. I think this spring series really would have benefited those two clubs in particular. But I think it's been an interesting season, without a doubt, and the young players have played their part.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, you mentioned about the bottom two clubs. You say it's a great education. They basically got a free test ride of what the WSL 1 season is going to be like. Now they have a whole summer to make changes, try and game plan so they can get results and not be relegated. And I think the Pro Rel should be also talked about because there will be a little bit of a different look come this fall for WSL 2 and WSL 1. We obviously know the one confirmed promotion going up to WSL 2 would be Tottenham Hotspur. They won the WPL a couple of weeks ago. We mentioned them on our last episode. But lots of questions. Who's going to be in slot 10 come this autumn? In WSL 1, could it be Everton, who won WSL 2 earlier on? Could we see a return of Doncaster Rovers, Bells? Who knows? I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? They've opened the application. It's not going to be based on the fact that Everton won the league, which would be the obvious choice, but it's going to be open to all clubs. You know, Watford Ladies, my team, could essentially apply for WSL 1 status if they wanted to. They wouldn't get it if they did, I can tell you that now, and that's no offence to Watford, but I know what the setup there is, probably more than most, and they wouldn't go for it anyway. But I think it is a toss-up between Everton and Doncaster, I really do. If you asked me to put my neck on the line and say who I think it will be, I think it will be Everton. I really do. I think they were the best team in WSL 2. They are starting to see a little bit more investment. They were able to bring in towards the back end of the season Fern Whelan, Aileen Whelan, you know, FAWSL 1 players. They have a good crop of young players in there as well. I really like Claudia Walker, who plays as more of an attacking midfield player. They have a lot of quality in that side. And it's not just about the quality of the team, it's the facilities. They obviously share a stadium with Liverpool Ladies. But Doncaster Rovers Bells will no doubt feel that they've got a chance as well. Obviously, we're only recently in the WSL 1. They have their own stadium that they share with the men at the Keep Moat in Doncaster. They have some good players as well that would be able to match up with WSL 1 players. They'd need to add a lot, I will be honest, because we saw how out of their depth they were when they were in the WSL 1 last year. It's definitely between those two, I think, mate. Millwall Lionesses had a brilliant FAWSL 2. There's a couple of articles on womenssoccerzone.com that feature some WSL 2 teams, and it was a really entertaining league, you know, with some really good players and some really good teams. But I do genuinely think it's probably between Everton and Doncaster. And as I say, if you want me to put my neck on the line, I think it probably will be Everton that join those clubs come September.
Yeah, for sure. And I know one of the things you mentioned a little while ago, another positive that this league took was accessibility and viewability, especially here in the States. I mean, you and I mentioned in years past that here in America, we don't have an opportunity to watch WSL games, minus maybe the one and I'm talking, of course, in the legal streaming variety, outside of the one odd match here or there, occasionally an audio broadcast, but it was brilliant to see week in and week out a match being live streamed on the BBC Sport website, teams putting together YouTube streams and Facebook live streams. I mean, this for me, you know, not to say that I couldn't be fully educated, but maybe for the first time this year, got to see a lot of matches, and I think that's only going to help the profile of the league as well.
I think it was beneficial that the BBC broadcasts weren't geo-blocked, were they? So that made things a lot easier, and obviously we saw games streamed on YouTube and Facebook pages. Bristol City were very good with putting things on both. Manchester City, I thought, were excellent in terms of their accessibility. Chelsea Ladies put things on, put their matches on Chelsea TV, which I know isn't accessible to necessarily an international audience, but it did open it up to, you know, their target audience. Essentially, it opened it up to Chelsea fans. You know, fans of the Chelsea men's team could watch Chelsea Ladies on Chelsea TV, and perhaps, you know, they would have seen it and thought, actually, do you know what? That's a lot better than I thought, and they should have thought that, because Chelsea had an excellent team this year with world-class players, and I'm hoping that some people did look at Chelsea TV. But you're right, in terms of accessibility, the Spring Series was not just an education for some of those teams, not an opportunity for not just an opportunity for teams to trial players and rotate players and try different systems. It was an opportunity to try things out off the field as well. You know, essentially the broadcasts that took place on YouTube and BBC in particular were trials. So I'm interested to see how the FA feel about how they went, how the BBC feel they went, and what sort of commitment there's going to be moving forward. Because the last thing we want is to have an international audience engaged, have new supporters of the FAWSL engaged from the UK as well, and then all of a sudden they turn around in September and say, actually, do you know what, we're not going to continue them anymore for whatever reason it might be. Because that would be one step forward and then about five steps back.
Agreed, 100%.
But look, it's been, I guess one of the reasons for the accessibility, and I guess the reason to open it up, was we've talked a lot about the young players. We know about established internationals that are in this league. For me, I mentioned Kira Walsh as being probably the best young player. The player that stood out for me in terms of, and I guess my perception is skewed a little bit because I get to see more of them. Arsenal Ladies are the team that are closest to where I live. Jordan Nobbs was phenomenal in the Spring Series, mate. She was all over the place in the games that I saw. She is not just starting to lead in terms of her ability, but she is a captain on that team now. I tell you that. She may not wear the armband all the time. I think she did captain the side either in the last game or the last couple of games. But she is now leading, not just with her performances, but with the way that she carries herself on the field. And I thought she was excellent in the Spring Series. But there were good performances all around. You know, they were, as I've said, Lucy Bronze. I thought Lucy Bronze and Steph Horton were excellent for Manchester City. I've already mentioned Kira Walsh. We've talked about Caroline Weir for Liverpool Ladies. I thought some of the Birmingham players were excellent. I mentioned Ellie Brazil. I thought she was great. Jess Carter, we haven't even talked about. She had a really good season. You know, PFA Young Player of the Year. I think the FAWSL is in a really good place. I really, really do. And you know, we were talking before the recording. It's in a good place, and that's why we were able to attract the likes of Crystal Dunn, Heather O'Reilly, and Carly Lloyd.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, these players took the opportunity to come over. I mean, all three of those players were in different situations in terms of how they went about in signing. But I think all three of them, they enjoyed their spells. I know came out on the FAWSL website a piece on Carly Lloyd and how she enjoyed her experience, obviously getting to play in a fair amount of big matches, both Champions League and FA Cup. I think Crystal, you know, this is a good move for her. Get to work with Emma Hayes for a while. I think that's going to be a very competitive team and a team that she's going to thrive in well. I think for Heather O'Reilly, this is an opportunity for her to kind of live out the dream a little bit, to play overseas, because she's obviously done everything that you can ask for here in the States and now have an opportunity to play in England and excel at it. And the question, I guess the last thing to talk about with this and to hear your thoughts is, I have my idea of who the three excelled the best in the season, but who do you think adapted out of those three the quickest and made an impact within their team?
That is a really difficult question, and you asked, you already warned me that you were going to be asking me before we came onto the recording, and I still don't really know the answer to it, mate. I think I saw glimpses from all of them. Now, I was in a very fortunate position. I actually went down to Chelsea's training ground last week, and I spoke to Crystal Dunn for a good half an hour, and she was very open with me and said, look, you know, this is the first time that I've played abroad. It took some adjusting to, you know, I was suffering from homesickness, and it wasn't necessarily an easy transition. She said she's loved it. You know, she's enjoying being at Chelsea. The facilities that she has available are phenomenal. But she's 24 years old and she's never played outside of the United States. So it's a big deal for her. So I think she adjusted pretty quickly, bearing in mind she was suffering a little bit with homesickness and maybe the transition wasn't as easy as maybe people thought it might be. So I think she had a really, really good season. I think it probably took her a little while to get going. I saw her in a couple of friendlies, and while she played well, it wasn't the Crystal Dunn that I'd seen in the NWSL. Carly Lloyd, you know what you're going to get with Carly. Carly is not going to dominate a game from minute one to minute 90. But what she is going to do is she's going to make big plays. She's going to step up in the moments when you need her. And we saw that with the goal in Denmark against Fortuna Hjøring. We saw it with the goal in Lyon in the UEFA Women's Champions League semi-final. We saw it with the goal in the FA Cup final at Wembley. So I think for Carly, the adapting was to probably the environment and the playing style more than it was the cultural difference, because she's an experienced head. She's been there and done it. She's won everything. So I think for her, I think the view has been quite divided on her, if I'm honest with you. I think if you spoke to fans of the FAWSL, I don't really know what they were expecting. But I think that some will look back on her time here and they will be really positive about it. And some will be like, well, you know, she did okay, but did she do enough for the reputation that she's got? From a personal perspective, it was great to see Crystal, Carly and Heyo. You know, I've spoken to Heyo quite a bit since she's been over here, as I say, because Arsenal is the closest club to me. Heyo's loved it. You know, she's not just enjoyed the things on the pitch, you know, the opportunity to explore London and to be an ambassador for Arsenal Ladies as well. You know, she's not just involved with things on the pitch, she's involved with the Arsenal Foundation, trying to support the charity arm of the club, and I know that the club have been hugely appreciative of that. I think she adapted really quickly, you know, but she had maybe a bit more time to adapt because she had the time away in Spain. You know, they had some pre-season friendlies behind closed doors. They had an FA Cup game at home to Tottenham, which would have been a good way to blend, to bed herself in, because it was against a team two divisions below. But yeah, I really struggle to answer that question, mate, because I'd have to watch every game minute by minute and really make a judgment call. But I think that all three of them have performed admirably. You know, they've all had an impact on their side for differing reasons. But it's only one of them that could win, and Crystal Dunn's the one that's come out on top. So she'll be looking to try and repeat that when the new season starts in September. And obviously she has got Champions League football to look forward to as well.
Oh, I think that's the big one. And now you brought up great points about all three. I mean, you know, Crystal, she knew coming into that team that squad in the forward line and the attacking midfield line was going to be very, very tough to crack and to stay in that lineup. Kinley, I think, you know, you're right in saying that we didn't see the same Crystal Dunn that we saw with the Washington Spirit, where she was always just running up and down the right side of the field, making things happen. She really blended herself nicely into Emma Hayes' system, and I thought that helped out a lot. She was linking up a lot more with her teammates as opposed to maybe what we've seen in the last two seasons with the Spirit, which I think that's going to help her game tremendously. I mean, she's a great striker, but, you know, definitely there's always pieces of the game to work on. And I think, you know, just by seeing a couple of sample sizes from her, working with the front runners, working with the forwards, you know, hitting those 1-2s really well, not just you know, playing long balls and having her run them down. I think, you know, working in tight areas is something that she can have her game grow, and I think she did really well. I think Heyo, probably for me of the three, mate, probably was the best of the bunch. I genuinely every time saw her take the field for Arsenal, and it was a few times because Arsenal was on the BBC package a couple of times and one or two live streams in there as well. She genuinely enjoyed it. Looked like she genuinely enjoyed being on the field and playing for the crest and playing for the team. And, you know, she's always one of those players that always has that quote unquote game face that she has, just nose down, head down, running her socks off, making things happen. And she's going to prove to be a key asset for that team come in the fall, because she's still has a tremendous amount of pace, can still play in that great ball, can score the odd goal or two, and can really make things happen. And I think she's going to be a benefit for them in the coming season. And look, you said it right with Carly. I mean, you know, she's going to find her moments to be successful, did everything in the big matches to help Man City obviously win the cup and to get to the semifinals, the Champions League, farther than they've ever been in their short history. But, you know, Helen Ward, she was on commentary in their last match against Liverpool. And, you know, she, you said mixed feelings. I think she was on the side of, look, you know, we knew what we were going to get with her coming in. She showed up for the big matches, but at times just looked lost in the handful of WSL matches that she played, and hardly called her name in the match against Liverpool. Always kind of seemed like just was there waiting for that ball to come to her, never really came. Now, granted, it's not like Man City had a tough go of it against Liverpool, because they jumped on them quickly and, you know, never let in. But yeah, I'm kind of with Wardy a little bit on that, you know. Tough times, obviously, picking up the straight red wasn't a great moment.
Which she's admitted that. I think she did an interview with BBC at the weekend, and she said she let herself down on that one, and she's admitted it. You know, we spoke on the last show about, you know, it wasn't her best moment. She got the suspension and the punishment that fitted the crime. She got a free game ban, and, you know, she came back for the Liverpool game at the weekend. I will say this. I don't want to sound like a Carly Lloyd apologist or someone that's kind of defending her for the sake of defending her, but I wonder how much Man City's game suits her style. You know, they use the flanks so much with Lucy Bronze and Demi Stokes, and a lot of their play comes from wide areas with the 4-3-3 with Nikita Paris and Tony Duggan in wide areas as well. You know, there's not that level of play through the middle of the park maybe that we're maybe used to seeing with a Carly Lloyd team, and that could potentially be a reason why we're not hearing her name called as much.
You're 100% right. I mean, yeah, when I said in that match against Liverpool kind of just looked lost in the midfield, they were running wide, they were making things happen. You know, when I spoke with Matt Beard, obviously, who coached in England and had a lot of success over there, he always mentioned about kind of the three-stage build-up, and they like to play the ball out wide once they work it through the stages. Yeah, you're right on that one. And you don't have to say that's being a Carly Lloyd apologist. That's actually 100% true. I think, you know, everything about that move made sense. Obviously, they've got world-class facilities. They're a dedicated professional club. They get the best out of their players, and they're going to get the best. And, you know, she benefited from being there and training 24/7, doing what she does. But yeah, you're right, you know, and I appreciate you bringing up that point, because maybe the style of that team is not fit to what she can mostly benefit from. She's going to benefit from it, but, you know, maybe at times, you know, she was a little lost because she wasn't getting the service. Man City just doesn't play that way. So yeah, no, you're 100% right on that.
Yeah, well, I know that she's enjoyed the time here. She's only ever been anything but complimentary about the setup at City and the facilities that are available. And, you know, I look at a young player like Kira Walsh and especially a Georgia Stanway, an attacking player still in her teenage years. They're going to benefit from playing with someone like Carly Lloyd, and as will the young players at Arsenal with Heather O'Reilly, as will the players that are around Chelsea benefiting from the experience and already of Crystal Dunn. You know, I thought, and just to clarify, when I said we haven't seen the Crystal Dunn that we saw in NWSL, that was at the start of the season when it was that transition period. What we saw was maybe a different player, but no less impactful. I thought Crystal was excellent for Chelsea this season, and I know that she will have a big part to play come September. But look, you know, I think all three of them have added something to the league. The big thing for me, mate, they've brought attention from you guys, because let's be honest, how many people in the last few years from the United States have been talking about the FAWSL? With the exception of the diehards like yourself and media like yourself, I had a lot of people tweeting me, can I watch this game? Can I watch this game? Can I watch this game this year? I've not had that before.
Well, let's face it. I mean, when you have the accessibility in previous years for the NWSL, every match being on YouTube and the occasional televised match, the people over stateside are expecting the content. They expect to see these matches. And you're right. I think for a lot of people, the first time that they've gotten to see a WSL teammate was when Arsenal played Seattle in a friendly last year. I think that's really, that was like the, not the first, but that was maybe a bit of an eye opener, if you will. And, you know, now the attention is there. Now you have the American faithful wanting to see their Heather O'Reilly, their Crystal Dunn, and that, at the time of the season, their Carly Lloyd. They want to see them perform. And, yeah, no, that's why the attention comes. And a lot of positives, as we said throughout this show, a lot of positives have come from the spring series. Now, hopefully the momentum carries forward coming into the fall.
Yeah, without doubt, without doubt. We've obviously talked about those three and obviously representing the top three clubs, but must stress, you know, I applaud and admire hugely the approaches and the strategy that some of the other teams have taken on. You know, there are England internationals almost across the board, with the exception of two or three teams. You know, Birmingham City ladies have players going, you know, into the England setups and the England youth setups. And Reading women signed Joe Potter and Jade Moore. As I said, they have Kirsty Lynette, Mary Earps. For me, Mary Earps was probably the best goalkeeper in the division, you know, and she plays for Reading women. She's not playing for the top three clubs, but I think Mary Earps is phenomenal, and actually I think she was unlucky not to make the Euro squad. But I think that there's a lot of quality in this league, and as I said earlier, I think the FAWSL is in a good place. There's still room for improvement, of course there is, but I think we have a really good product over here that is starting to gain more attention, and I hope that we see more players coming over from different countries, and we see young English players being developed like Kira Walsh and Lottie Wubemoy and the others that we've mentioned along the way. So yeah, I think we'll wrap it up there, mate. We'll keep it under an hour, or maybe we've probably just shifted over an hour, actually, so we should probably wrap it up. But, yeah, spring series over and done with. The season will start in September, and we will, of course, be covering it from when it starts. And I guess the only thing that's left to do is to give you our contact details. We're on Twitter on @WOSOZone. Of course, you can visit our website for other content on womensoccerzone.com. You can also email us on wosozone@gmail.com. Keep an eye out for some features and mini podcasts that are going to be coming out over the next week or two as well. Keep an eye out for one with Dawn Scott, the sports scientist and fitness coach for the US Women's National Team. JJ, thanks for your time, mate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much, listeners. Take care of yourselves. We'll be back soon. Until then, bye-bye.